Chapter 17. The Covenant of Terra and Mars. Tribune. Unspoken Sanction. The commanders convened at the Godspur. Those who couldn't withdraw from the field were forced to appear in hololithic form, their life-size images diluted of colour and flickering with interference. Whatever purpose the circular chamber had served in the age of the Eldar Empire was overshadowed by the machinations of its current imperial occupiers, who met amidst chattering cogitators and medicaes working on the wounded. A central table ran on low power, projecting a thin green hollow of Kalistar's maddening tubular geoscape. Anti-air turrets hammered their payloads skywards in a ceaseless song, sending shivers through the Wraithbone Tower. Even as Diocletian drew breath to address the gathered officers, the image of Princeps Phaela Zan shrank back in her control throne and blinked out of existence. Several of the gathered officers made the sign of the Aquila, or linked their knuckles in the sigil of the cog, gravely acknowledging Zan's evident demise.
"The city halts," said Diocletian.
There were nods around the table. Most were desperately weary.
"We all have somewhere to be, so let's be swift. Archimandrite?"
The Archimandrite stood hunched over the hollow table, the Domitar-like chassis that had become her new form towering above all others present. Her murky faceplate offered an unreliable suggestion of the face within.
"I have inloaded a complete and constantly updating awareness field of the Mechanicum's present forces," she vocalized from the bronze speaker gills in her chest. "This information is drawn from the exloded sensories of each Alpha unit active within Kalistar. Lacking any orbitals for requisite scanning and atmospheric intelligence, I am devoting significant data runnage to maintaining an active tactical sensory overview for each of these Alpha units."
"Can you render this information usable by the rest of us?" asked Diocletian.
"Yes, albeit in primitive form."
Unmodified humanity lacked the biomechanical enhancements required to see things in the spheric data streams available to the cultists of Mars.
"Vocalization and crude hollow imagery will have to suffice."
"It will," the custodian replied.
"I speak with the aforementioned insight in mind," the Archimandrite augmented. "Summation. The Mechanicum has access to the most accurate, evolving overview of the field of conflict, accessible by all unit leaders. Result. Cohesion and performance will be accordingly improved. Judgment. As the disposition of forces currently stands, the city will fall. Enemy reinforcement will only hasten the process. This is an unacceptable outcome."
Dense servos and fiber bundle muscle cables whirred as Jean Madao of the Theranatoi gestured to various points of scathing conflict on the hollow.
"They've gained precious little ground so far. Ignatum holds the choke points leading into the repaired arterials, with the majority of the Skitari in the Unifier's war servitors.
Tribune Endymion has the Sisterhood and the 10,000 deployed in defensive positions along major thoroughfares, denying the city to the enemy."
"So the city holds," Diocletian repeated.
"The city holds for now,"
declared Jean Madao. He was a pale figure, almost unhealthily so, clad in the bulk of his shining, cataphracti armour. His black hair didn't quite hide the faint markings of blue tattoos on his scalp, legacies of a childhood among the coastal tribes of the faraway world upon which he'd been born.
"But the Archimandrite is right," he continued, "and this is a shadow of what's yet to come. Outrider reports have been filtering in for the last 2-day cycles. Troop transports, titans, hordes of the warp rot. The reinforcements you have brought us today, along with those sent ahead in convoys for the last month, are allowing us to stand our ground. But gone is any realistic vision of crusading forth. This entire sector of the Webway is flooded with the foe. We can't hold the impossible city for more than 3 or 4 days.
The Blood Angel finally lifted his gaze from the revolving hollow.
"Where, may I ask, is Tribune Endymion?"
"In Commander Krull," added Diocletian. "Can no one reach them via hollow?"
The Terminator gestured again, indicating a portion of the rotating map on the tunnel's ceiling. If the host of flashing runes was anything to go by, the fighting was thickest there.
"The Sister Commander has led the forces defending the main entrance to the city's catacombs," said Jean Madau. "The greatest concentration of defenders stands with them."
Diocletian didn't need to be told why. If the foe broke through to the catacombs, it was a short journey from there into the Mechanicum sections of the webway, and then onto the dungeon itself.
"I am present as well."
This from one of the Scutari Alphas, manifested as a hololith. The figure was seated on an unseen slab that failed to project into the image. Hands moved in and out of the hollow as tech adepts worked on the augmented warrior's damaged limbs. A shattered cord claw was being machined out from his wrist. The hydraulic musculature of his right thigh was being hastily reworked. A scorched chestplate sigil marked him as Echo 71.
"Has there been word of Ra?"
asked Jean Madau.
"Probes have been dispatched to reach the Tribune. He is engaged with the forward elements. The fighting here is spire to spire, dense. It occludes individuals. Tracking becomes a trial."
"I am inloading no vision data from Alpha units present near enough to Tribune Endymion or Sister Commander Kroll to relay accurate streams back to me," said the Archimandrite.
The robotic chassis lowered on growling hydraulics, seeming to Diocletian suddenly threateningly ursine.
"Casualties are severe."
"Acknowledged and confirmed,"
the Scutari warlord replied. The four mismatched lenses that served as his face within the hood rotated as they refocused.
"This is war without orbitals," cursed Diocletian.
It had been different in the tunnels for all those years. Jet bike outriders carried messages and reports to and from the barricaded passages, maintaining easy, if frantic, lines of communication. But with the whole city spread open and besieged, chaos reigned.
"This is one of the webway's principal hubs. Can we afford to lose it? How many years will its loss put the great work back?"
"What of any updated evacuation contingencies?"
he asked. One of the hololiths spoke, a Titan princeps hardwired into an armored throne. His faceplate was modeled into the same snarling visage as the warhound he piloted.
"Prefect Koros, we bled for a year to take this city."
Diocletian turned to the man's image.
"And that year was merely one of the five we have been consigned within the web. If we are forced back into the Unifier's passageways, so be it. It doesn't change our duty. What matters above all is that we defend the Mechanicum's tunnels. The enemy must not reach Terra."
"We can hold the city," said another hololith,
one of the robed and hooded Sicari, the Scutari elite echelon. He, she, or indeed it was impossible to know with many of them, cracked its taser goad into life.
"Any rumination of evacuation must spare the following factors into the final equation. Primaris, that once abandoned, there will be an infinitesimal probability of retaking Kalistar again without significant reinforcement, far beyond what currently stands within the garrisons of the solar system. Dislodging an entrenched enemy here would be a prospect of mathematically ludicrous possibility. Secundus, the scion of vigilant light cannot flee. Evacuation would necessitate the dismantling and reconvening of the god machine in its component pieces."
Jean Madau shook his head.
"No time. You know there's no time, Protector. The Scion would remain, either with its crew evacuated so they might fight another day, piloting another Titan, or ensconced, allowing the Scion to fight as part of the rearguard."
Several of the Princeps and Scutari Alphas present shared canted exchanges through their linked vox melange.
"I assure you," the Custodian Terminator vowed, "I am well aware of the sacrifice that your Legio would be making."
"Ignatum cannot accept these terms,"
said the aged princeps of the Imperius Cressia.
"The Scion cannot be abandoned."
"We are already falling apart," Diocletian thought.
"Look at me," he said slowly. "Forget the pride of your Legio, Caleb Asanus. Forget the battle lust of the war machine singing inside your blood. Forget the last 5 years we've waged war together. The banners of heraldic glory that sway from your reaver's weapon limbs and the companions we have all lost. Look at me. Look at the color of my armor, and remember whose authority I speak with. The princeps' features were masked behind his ceremonial helm, but he nodded. This time the archimandrite growled a retort.
The Mechanicum has committed resources far exceeding acceptable parameters, sacrificing the retaking of Sacred Mars in order to defend Kalasta. It was made clear to us that this was a focal point within the Webway, a spoke nexus, a root hub. Our participation in the great work on this scale came with the condition of keeping the Eresian path open for a possible invasion of our homeland.
We are doing all we can,
Jean Madal pointed out through gritted teeth.
You see those of us among the cult Mechanicum as lacking emotive responses, but that is base ignorance. All souls, augmented and unaugmented, fight harder with something to fight for. The retaking of Sacred Mars galvanizes us, as well as being promised to us. Summation? The impossible city must not fall.
You should have agreed without the need for such assurances, Diocletian replied, feeling the first stirrings of real anger. I suggest you watch your words, priestess. Your omnisire has need of you. The covenant between Mars and Terra takes primacy over all else.
One of the Archimandrite's eye lenses rotated, projecting the crisp, miniature hololithic image of Sister Kyria. Diocletian knew at once what the image file was, an archived file from the internal pictures of Fabricator General Zagreus Kane. The recorded voice overlaying the image confirmed it.
The Mechanicum will supply your war on this single condition. The Omnisire himself once spoke of a route within this alien webway that reaches back to Sacred Mars. Adnecta Primus Mendel named it the Eresian Path. No matter the cost, no matter the effort, you will see it reinforced and held, ready for use once the Omnisire's great work is completed. Even if thousands of other routes and passages must fall, you will ensure that the way to Mars remains in Imperial control.
The image of Kyria signed her agreement and blinked out of existence.
As evidenced, the Archimandrite said, assurances were made.
Made when holding Kalasta was practically guaranteed, Martian. Now, I say again, we will do all we can. But we all have a duty that stands above personal desire. Evacuating the Unifiers and their supplies takes priority. They are the Emperor's own adepts and apprentices. We will begin a convoy, but it will need defending at all times. The enemy is likely to infiltrate the Mechanicum's tunnels through any number of capillaries.
Several of the Mechanicum's officers, Skitari, Princeps, Unifier priests and priestess, looked at one another. The air fairly thrummed between them. Diocletian wondered just what new spheric communion was taking place that the unaugmented present weren't privy to. It felt argumentative, though Diocletian only had the subtlest of body language reactions to judge by. One of them snorted in weak amusement. Arkan Land sat slouched in a corner, holding a ration pack's fluid phial in shaking hands. He turned haunted eyes upon the others, scarcely noticing them, still seeing the madness he'd witnessed outside in the city.
I see now why the Omnisire kept the great work bound in absolute secrecy. To avoid this pathetic conflict of mortal minds.
The Archimandrite turned to stare at the hunched techno-archaeologist. The cyborg construct's eye lenses meted out cold accusation, but the man did nothing but snort again, looking away. His hands hadn't stopped shaking for an hour. Even his irritating ape creature was bizarrely solemn, sat at his side.
"We'll begin evacuation preparations," Diocletian said at last. "Holding the tunnels is what matters now. We will give them the city, and nothing more."
Jean Madao took a breath.
"Dio, even holding the tunnels may be beyond us for more than a few weeks.
The host besieging the city has every chance of driving us back to the dungeon.
Unacceptable, repeated the Archimandrite.
We're wasting time.
Diocletian was on the edge of unmannerly cursing when another hololith appeared at the table. This one wore damaged armor plating, spinning a spear in gloved hands. Weapons and talons slashed into view at the edges of the hollow's range, but the warrior weaved aside from every blow he didn't block. Bladed replies lashed back, killing the wielders of those weapons. The warrior didn't break stride. He was always moving.
Reload!
The hollow called out, laden with distortion. He drove his spear into the ground by his feet and immediately pulled his meridian swords, turning and whirling into another phase of his arcane battle dance.
Compliance,
a servitor's voice, toneless and obedient. The warrior moved away from the spear. It vanished out of the hollow's range. The swords rose and fell, twisted and parried, thrust and hacked. Blood rained past him in flickering sprays. Endlessly came the crash of energy fields ramming against Ceramite, warping the reinforced metal, mangling it, shattering it. The figure of a colourless space marine staggered into the hollow's view, tumbling to the ground with a blade through his spine. The warrior severed the falling legionary's head from his shoulders without looking, already turning to meet another foe.
Reloaded,
came the augmented mechanical voice again. The warrior sheathed both blades in a smooth motion, weaved aside from a swinging flail, which missed him by a meter, and reached upwards. He caught the spear in the air, bringing it down in another parry. He disengaged with a roar of effort, throwing his unseen opponent back. The guardian spear banged three times, spitting three bolts in succession, only to spin with another frenzied howl of abused energy fields as the blade punched through another legionary's chest plate. The spear tore viscera and shards of armor free in a wrenching burst as he yanked the blade back one-handed. His other fist discharged a laser spit of digital weaponry from his clenched knuckles, las-cutting through the faceplate of a charging crested legion officer. Another fighter joined him in the whirling dance, a cloaked female wielding a circuit-lit Zweihander, guarding his back one moment, then guarded in kind a moment later. They couldn't have looked more unalike, fighting with utterly different styles at different speeds, male and female, gold and black, towering, gen-hanced warrior in Auramite and regal huntress in armour that honoured the most ancient eras of warfare. Yet they moved in savage harmony, never coming close to harming one another. They fought in the spaces created by each other's fighting styles. She hacked overhead when the long spear whirled aside, killing the enemy that fought to slip within his guard. He thrust over her shoulder, slaughtering the foes that sought to move behind her. Zephon's pale eyes narrowed, his concentration absolute, taking in the ballet of violence unfolding before him. He had seen the warriors of the 10,000 fight before, albeit only in grainy picked footage. He had heard the countless unpoetic comparisons describing their uniqueness as the perfect exemplar of a process that became diluted and rushed to mass-produce the Legiones Astartes. Yet he had never seen them in battle against space marines. This warrior reaved through them, reaved through Zephon's cousins from the rebellious legions, cutting them down, butchering them the way Zephon himself had massacred his way across human and alien battlefields. How easy, all of a sudden, to see how Constantine Valdor, the Captain General of the Custodian Guard, was considered an equal of the Primarchs themselves in matters of bladework, when any custodian could be as skilled as this. Had the Emperor foreseen this? His thoughts curdled, growing gravid with treason. Is this what they were made for? This annihilation? This slaughter of legionaries?
We're here, Dio,
came the custodian's words between panted breaths. Diocletian inclined his head to the embattled hollow.
Salutations, Ra, and greetings as well, Commander Krull.
Kyria watched the first ship descend through the atmosphere. Black, even before the scorching of its heat shielding, its hull was unchanged by the shroud of fire that wrapped it. The command deck of the Magadan orbital was never quiet. Servitors limped and murmured and bleated code at one another. Robed adepts spoke in austere tones, avoiding all eye contact as they worked the controls, the buttons, the levers that kept the station in a geostationary orbit above the Imperial Palace. Vox stations rasped, doors whirred open and ground closed. Kyria was the silence at the storm's heart. She watched through the great oculus as another of the Black Fleet made planetfall. There was something beautifully dramatic in how a vessel born within the void caught fire when it sought to land for the very first time. The flames of atmospheric entry served as Terra's welcoming embrace. Another figure joined her upon the viewing platform. Kyria didn't need to turn to see who it was. The mistress of the Black Fleet greeted her with clicking talons.
"Your melancholic gazing is unbecoming,"
sighed the older woman. Kyria rejected the rebuke, her hands weaving a response.
"Melancholy has no place within me. You mistake dread for discomfort."
"Dread?"
"Yes, dread. That it should come to this."
"We have always known the drama may unfold in this manner. The preparations have been in place since the very first of us forswore the use of her tongue."
Kyria met the other woman's stare for a moment, seeking some semblance of emotion, of perspective beneath the assured facade. She saw no evidence of either.
"How resolute you are," she sighed,
and then gestured to the descending ships.
"How can you look upon this without fearing what it portends? The Imperium will never be the same with what we do here today."
The mistress of the Black Fleet stroked her metal talons along the guardrail, eliciting a whispery whine of iron against iron. She replied after lifting the claws from the cold metal.
"We are not the engineers of the Imperium's change, sister. We merely react to it. The Imperium changed when Horus set his blinded eyes upon a throne he does not deserve."
Kyria's eyes burned with sick amusement.
"You absolve yourself of the malice we are willingly undertaking?"
"We do nothing but the Emperor's bidding. This is his will. This is what must be done."
Veronica drew back her hood, baring her olive features. She had the dusky melange complexion of most Terran natives, and her eyes were a dark enough brown to be black. There was curiosity in her eyes, the expression not unkind.
1,000 souls, Kyria. Is that really so many? Is that such a sacrifice, weighed against the consequences of doing nothing?"
Kyria met the mistress's eyes and felt a moment of shame.
1,000 innocents, nervously awaiting the soul binding they were falsely promised. 1,000 men, women, and children, believing they go now to serve their emperor."
Veronica's clawed hands gestured a swift reply.
"And serve him they will. Few souls in the entire empire can claim such purity of service. What is this resistance inside you, sister? Have you become so enamored of battle that you believe yourself above our true calling? You are a warden, Kyria, not a warrior."
For a time, Kyria watched the second ship descending, wreathed in atmospheric flame, carrying its living cargo to their service within the Imperial Palace.
"I am both now," she sighed, "warden and warrior. The war has made us all both."
Veronica's expression showed faint distaste.
"Perhaps so. I will leave you to your contemplation, sister, and wish you well for your own planetfall."
Kyria knew she should prepare herself soon. Her place was on the third ship.
"Wait."
Veronica waited, her eyes on Kyria's own.
1,000 souls, Kyria sighed. "What do the calculations state? How long will they last?"
The mistress of the Black Fleet lifted her hood back into place, covering her silvering hair.
"They will burn for one day," she sighed.
With that, she turned and walked away, leaving Kyria to watch the oculus alone.
1,000 souls today, Kyria thought. And what of tomorrow?